Well, what is going on, everybody? Man, another awesome and great episode today. We just keep steamrolling these episodes through, and each week they just keep getting better and better. Man, I am so excited for this week's episode. So blessed and honored and thankful that this guest was able to come on today and share what she has to offer and what she's been through. You know, she's going to talk a little bit about the mind-body connection. We're going to dive into narcissism. Yes, narcissism. It's a huge topic right now. And she's a huge advocate when it comes to victims of dealing with somebody that's narcissist in your life. So today we have Adriana Bucci on. And all I can say is be ready. Be ready to learn a lot from this episode. Also, I want to say today's episode is sponsored by Ice Crunchy. They're super comfortable, super fashionable Apple Watch bands that you can just simply detach the old band, put these on, they're stretchy, and boom, you're making a fashion statement. So you can visit them at the, T-H-E-I, the letter I, scrunchy, scrunchie.com. Enough talking, because I seriously just want to get into this week's episode. I'm so excited for what you guys are going to get out of this. With that being said, let's dive into this week's episode. Let's go. Man, I am so excited for today because this is a topic that I actually deal with, and I'm just excited for what she has to share with us today. I got Adriana Bucci on, and thanks for coming on today.
Hey, Dylan. Thanks so much for having me.
So tell me a little bit about you and what you do and how you got into it.
Awesome. So very long story, but I will try and give you the most Coles Notes version of it as I can. So my name's Adriana. I'm based out of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and I'm a life coach. I help survivors of narcissistic abuse to heal from the abuse and to empower themselves to like move forward in life, set those boundaries and live life on their own terms. And I got into this because of chronic pain. Oh, super wow. Random. Yeah. So I actually, you know, I was raised by a narcissistic mother and I ended up having chronic pain for 4 years from 2015 to 2019. I did all the things that I possibly could do to try and cure the pain. It was like migraines, TMJ dysfunction, neck pain, upper back pain, carpal tunnel syndrome, like the whole nine yards. It was a complete disaster. And eventually I would find out about the mind-body connection once I got super desperate and couldn't find any more pain relief options because I literally tried everything. And, you know, I was offended by the concept that chronic pain is caused by repressed emotions from childhood trauma, but I did the work anyways. It's all inner emotional work. Sure enough, within 4 months, I was out of chronic pain and I decided to be a life coach who helped people with chronic pain. And eventually, as I was posting on Instagram and sharing my story and all that fun stuff, I noticed people were resonating more and more with the narcissistic abuse aspect of everything. And that's when I kind of realized this is an epidemic. There are so many people who have dealt with narc abuse. And that's kind of when I shifted my focus to narcissistic abuse recovery. And the majority of survivors have some form of chronic pain or mystery symptoms or mystery illnesses where they've gone to the doctor, they've done the tests, they're not dying, but they just are uncomfortable all the time. And yeah, I teach how to do that inner work, how to heal. And sure enough, they are able to heal both physically and emotionally from all the crap that they've been through in their lives. So I hope that was a good enough summary.
Yeah, no, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
So you can actually have pain from dealing with narcissistic abuse or any kind of mental illness.
Yeah. Mind-blowing. It's completely mind-blowing. Like, yeah, 100%.
Wow. So can you tell me a little bit what like a narcissist is?
Yeah. So a narcissist is a person. So, and don't worry if they're not diagnosed because they probably will never be diagnosed. It's somebody who just thinks they are awesome. They think that there's nothing wrong with them. They are actually really insecure, but they don't tell you that. And then they project their insecurities onto other people to feel better about themselves, pretty much. And they do so much damage to their survivors. So they do a lot of manipulation, a lot of gaslighting, a lot of, you know, pretending that whatever they did to you didn't actually happen. So then you think you're going crazy and all that fun stuff. They think very highly of themselves and not like in a healthy confidence kind of way, but in a grandiose, like, I think I'm the best and I'm better than everybody and I'm the eternal victim type of mentality. So they just never take accountability for anything. They don't have the ability to self-reflect, and they just really don't care how their targets feel. And what they really are trying to do is get a rise out of you, and they sort of feed off of that. So that's how you can definitely identify if somebody is a narcissist in your life. And they're never going to admit to it of how they've damaged you. They really don't care. They're just really into themselves and into whatever narrative they're trying to push about themselves, which is a false narrative because deep down they're damaging, destructive people. And yeah, they're pretty much on a mission to destroy whoever's life who will give them narcissistic supply for the purpose of getting narcissistic supply, which is just getting a rise out of people, which is a really weird priority to have in life.
Wow. So there's a couple things that you touch base on. I want to start with, could you tell the audience a little bit about what gaslighting is?
Yep. So gaslighting is pretty much when somebody denies your reality. So you can be having a conversation with somebody, they'll say something to you, you call them out on it, and they'll say, I never said that, or you're crazy, or you're way too sensitive, you're overreacting, you're taking it the wrong way. Instead of, you know, actually talking about it and working it out and clearing up any confusion, they just push it back onto you, or they deny it altogether, and then you feel like you're going crazy. So any scenario where you know what the reality is, but they're telling you that whatever reality you're seeing is not real, and then you start thinking you're going nuts.
This sounds like just a big crazy loop.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
So how do you get yourself out of this loop, especially if it's people that you can't necessarily get out of your life?
Right. So, I mean, first of all, it's recognizing that you're even in that loop. So a lot of people go through their entire lives having no idea. So recognizing it would be step number one. And, you know, setting those boundaries would be step number two, but it's obviously way easier said than done. But, you know, you definitely need to create some sort of space between you and the other person. And if that other person's someone that, like, you legally have to have communication with, it's really difficult, especially in the case of like sharing custody, for example, of a child. That can get very sticky. So, you know, you can still separate yourself from that person. And maybe there's a court order that you have to stay in contact with them to, like, you know, drop the kid off here and there, or whatever the situation is. And that is, you have to like train yourself to just be a gray rock. And gray rocking, it's when you just take on the personality of a gray rock and you're just boring, one word answers, you just stick to what the contract is. And you have to sort of just treat it like a business transaction more than anything, without giving too much emotion or anything, because they're going to feed off of that. And, you know, you better believe they're probably going to insult you at any chance that they get. But the trick is to just try to not personalize it and understand that they're really just trying to get a rise out of you. And easier said than done, of course. So there's a lot of emotional work that can be done to make the whole thing a lot easier and a lot more smooth sailing. And yeah, like, you really have to set some form of boundary, whether it's you go lower, no contact, or you're just, you know, you have to be in communication legally, but that communication is only about the legal stuff that you have to be in communication about.
So what are some of the techniques or things besides just gray rocking that we can do to kind of deal with the scenario, I guess, because it can be very, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're constantly, because I'm dealing with a lot of divorced men, and I think there's a little bit of a stigma that men are usually the, you know, narcissists. Mm-hmm. But I think it goes unseen that sometimes women can be the narcissists as well.
Absolutely.
And I've been trying to coach divorced men in this aspect because they're dealing with that also. How do you deal with it when they're constantly threatening you going back to court, or I'm going to take the kids from you, I'm going to get more child support from you? Like, these are real things that, you know, people are dealing with. How do you go about that? Mm-hmm.
So yeah, stuff like that, it can be very difficult to deal with. And yes, narcissistic women exist and they do so much damage to men, and men can't really talk about it because, you know, it's just not talked about in society and stuff like that. So there's a lot of that going on, which really sucks. And then when you're sharing a kid with somebody like this, and they're threatening you to destroy you and get more custody and all that stuff, you know, it's very difficult to keep your cool in a scenario like that. But it's important to understand that most narcissists are all talk. And if you have a document that specifies what the agreement is, you just say, refer to the document, if you want to make any changes, you can speak to my attorney. And chances are they probably won't even bother. They're just really trying to get a rise out of you. If there's already something on paper that states what the agreement is, and, you know, like, do you really think that they're going to go out of their way to go back to court, go back through the whole process, however many more years that's going to take, to get more custody? Like, the reality is they're just trying to get a rise out of you. And of course, if they start stalking you and like acting crazy and violent and stuff like that, that's like, you know, restraining order territory, law enforcement territory. But when it comes to stuff like this, where it's just there, threatening you for more custody or just insulting your ability as a parent, it's important to understand that they would say that to anybody. So it's not about you. It would be whoever is in that role of, like, in this case, the father of the child. And whether or not it's specifically you or it's some other person that is dealing with it, like, the reaction would be the same anyways. And like, they're all kind of the same, like, they have the same script book. I don't really understand how that happens. But yeah, just understanding that
it's so crazy.
And like, just kind of seeing them for who they are, as like just toddlers having tantrums, is a great way to look at it. Because it's just like, okay, well, logically, you know that this is the agreement, this is what the situation is, but this person is having a tantrum. And they're doing that in order to literally just get a rise out of you. So that's why doing that emotional work is so important, because once you start, you know, figuring out what your emotions are trying to tell you, how to release them, and what they're all about, it's so much easier to be in a situation with somebody who's this, like, you know, high conflict, and keep your cool and be able to discern that, like, no, she's trying to get a rise out of me. This is exactly what's happening. I'm going to be a gray rock. And the gray rock method works wonders. But the thing is, people say that it doesn't work, because when you first try it out, you know, if you really think about it, right, the whole purpose, the whole thing that narcissists want is to get an emotional reaction out of you. They want to see you running around in circles. They get a little kick out of it. It doesn't make any sense. It's weird. It's a strange priority to have in life, but that is what it is. And when you gray rock, you're being as boring as possible. You are not giving them that drama that they're looking for. You are not giving them that reaction that they're looking for, but they feel entitled to that. So you better believe they're going to try a little bit harder to try and get that back from you, because yeah, that's going to piss them off. So sticking to your guns when it comes to gray rocking is key. And that is difficult, especially when you're under the pressure, especially when it's happening like right in front of your eyes, when you're in that bubble as it's occurring. That's why doing that inner work and figuring out your emotions is going to help you keep your cool and continue gray rocking, because you have to stick to your guns, because the last thing you want to do is give them what they want, which is supply. And the more you do that, the more they're just not going to really have an interest in harassing you as much. But it might not be an overnight thing, which is the most important thing to understand. And, you know, they might pop back in if they're just not getting supply from wherever they're getting supply from, and that's not working out. Yeah, they will probably swoop back in, try to get that supply from you, and you need to just continue being a gray rock. No, they did not change. No, they did not have a coming to God moment. No. It is just manipulation tactics to try and get, you know, that energy out of you.
Yeah, I've actually talked to some people that have dealt with that, because they'll have an ex that has probably like another ex, and they're remarried. So they got two exes and remarried, and they kind of just bounce around.
Yep.
You know, one is dealing with the issue, then they come to them, and then they go to their husband or wife, and then they kind of just go in this big old circle. So now, what would you say for somebody that has gotten remarried, that spouse is dealing with the ex-narcissist?
What do you mean?
So say like, I'm remarried, and if my ex is a narcissist, how would my spouse, like, if it's a like affecting my spouse,
right?
Do they just cut themselves out, or what's the best plan of action for the spouse of, like, if you're remarried?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you don't have children with the ex-spouse, there's no reason to be in any sort of contact with that person. So definitely cut them out of your life. If there are children involved, of course, like, you don't want to get the new spouse really involved, right? Like, you know, she's probably going to be a stepmother to the children and all that when you have custody and whatnot. But the more that you kind of, you know, deal with the kids when you have them, the better. And just kind of, you know, keep the new spouse out of it as much as possible. And, you know, the ex-wife will probably try and harass the new spouse and warn the new spouse about like what a horrible husband you'll be and all that fun stuff, because they do that. So yeah, just kind of explaining to the new spouse, like, hey, this, my ex is narcissistic. Don't be surprised if she does this, this, and this. And, you know, like, I'm going to try and keep you out of it as much as possible. And, you know, if you're with a healthy person, like, they'll be understanding and all that stuff. If you're dealing with another narcissist, you'll know that, you know, you'll know in their reaction.
Yeah, I think narcissists have this tendency to just pull people in.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can tell the new spouse, hey, you know, this is how they are. You know, try and keep their distance, but somehow they still pull them into this abuse because they see it getting taken out on you. And then it kind of draws your new spouse in. And so I think they have a hard time because it's not directly towards them, but they take it as directly towards them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's happening to you. So how do you not take it towards you, right?
Yeah. So I want to sidestep a little bit and go towards parents. That are narcissists. Yeah. Do you cut them out completely, or how do you go about dealing with family members, parents, anything like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's okay to cut them out completely because you don't really, you know, once you're an adult and this person who brought you into this world for the purpose of really just having a lifetime supply of narcissistic supply, which is just not a great reason to have kids, but whatever. Yeah, like you can totally cut your parents off, and it's hard. It's not easy. And I definitely was raised by a narcissistic mother. I was a mix of low and no contact, and she actually passed away over last summer. So, you know, the only regret I really have was not going low, no contact sooner, because that would have saved me a lot of sanity. But when you're in it, it's really hard because there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of shame, there's a lot of, but that's my mother, but these are my family members, but this is, you know, family is everything according to society. But the truth is, family is not everything. If your family is filled with abusers and enablers and they don't have your back, what kind of family is that? Like, how is that a safe environment for you? So it's really coming to terms with that and accepting that, you know, yeah, if it's, especially if it's your mother, this is my mother and she's never going to change. I can tell you straight up, they do not change. Even when they're on their deathbed, they do not apologize. They do not confess. They do not have a coming to God moment. It is not a thing. They will take their bullshit with them to the grave. And the sooner you come to terms with that, the better, because then that will enable you to start your healing process, because you can spend so much time trying to make things work over and over and over again. But at some point, you have to start living your life. And if that means much reduced contact or no contact at all with your family, if that's what it takes for your sanity, I can tell you that it's worth it, because, you know, that cannot be replaced.
Right. Now, what if one parent is a narcissist, but the other one's not? Do you still continue the relationship with the one that's not? Or, I don't know, it's kind of a sticky subject to go into, because I feel like the one that's not sometimes gets pulled into the one that is, and they just stick by their side. And so you never can really have that relationship with them. If they are willing to have that relationship with you, should you just have a one-on-one relationship with them? What would be your suggestion?
Yeah. So, I mean, it would be a relationship where you would need to definitely set some boundaries around like subject matter and stuff like that. So if, you know, it goes both ways, right? So if you're dealing with the enabler parent, and they don't understand why you're cutting off the narcissistic parent, and they just don't want to see the reality and stuff like that, there's only so much you can do to convince them to see the light and to see the reality of things. And it's okay to harbor a little bit of resentment towards them, because, you know, as a child, it's like, where were you sticking up for me? And you were more afraid of your spouse than doing the right thing for your kid. So, you know, it's totally okay if you have emotions and feelings like that towards the, you know, the good parent, the enabling parent or whatever, because they were supposed to be the adult as well, right? So you have two people who were not exactly being adults, and that's really unfortunate. And if they can't like see that and they can't support you and support your decision, that's going to be really difficult to keep up that relationship, right? And, you know, they might be staying for their whatever reasons that they're staying, but at the end of the day, you can't force somebody to do the right thing and to do what's right for their lives. So if you're able to be okay with that and to have that sort of like one-on-one relationship with that one parent, just make sure there's boundaries in place. So whatever we talk about does not get repeated to the other parent. And if you find out that it does, you know, there has to be some sort of a consequence for that. And you have to understand that that is just as toxic as dealing with a narcissist themselves. And, you know, other boundaries, like, you know, I don't want you to talk about the other parent, you know, stuff like that, like whatever your limits are, just make sure you're expressing that, see how it goes, but don't have the expectation that it's going to be like a wonderful relationship with that parent, especially if they're not willing to see the reality or, you know, do something about it or, you know, take agency over their lives after this point. Because at this point, like, their children are adults. So it's like you can do different things in your life and you don't have to subscribe to this for the rest of your life. But a lot of people don't really see it that way. So don't be surprised if the other parent does not see it that way. It just kind of is what it is. And it's a lot of acceptance work, which is hard. It's hard. It's not an overnight thing.
Yeah, I think one thing that I've learned is if you're raised by a narcissist, you have a lot of limiting beliefs because you have always been taught you can't do certain things. You have to do them a certain way. And it's kind of really hard to break that cycle. And I know it's a lot of therapy and things like that, but it's hard. It's really, really hard.
But worth it.
It would definitely worth it once you break free.
Yeah.
Definitely. Now, same thing for friends. You cut them out as well? Or can you still try and make?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if it's just like drinking buddies and they're not like actually actively, you know, harming you, then whatever, right? If it's like an acquaintance and they're not impacting your life, but like I would just steer clear of them. Regardless. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now there's a couple types of narcissists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So there's, you know, there's a bunch of different types, but I'll talk about like the two main ones, I guess. So like, yeah, covert and overt. So overt narcissists, you can tell right away who they are, right? They're not hiding behind a false self. Like you see the person talk, you know, they're an asshole and you know, not to get involved, right? Like you can definitely tell, but when you're dealing with a covert narcissist, those are the ones you really need to watch out for because they present themselves way differently than they actually are. And they are one person in public and behind closed doors, they're like a complete monster. And they're so skilled at this false persona that anybody in that immediate circle would think that you're nuts for even suggesting that they could be abusive behind closed doors because they just can't see it because they're just, you know, they're really good at acting and it really is all an act. And that's where it gets very confusing because, you know, they have their good moments and they are super nice sometimes. And that's the love bombing stage. And the thing to understand is that abuse is not going to be successful if it's only bad times, right? So they have to be nice sometimes in order to like rope you back in, gain your trust again after like the huge blow up, the devaluation and the discard. And then they're just that completely different person. And then you start to think like, oh, maybe there is hope for this person. Maybe there is some humanity in this person. Maybe things can get better. And, you know, if it's like a spouse or significant other, it's like, oh, maybe things can be the way they were the first 2 months of our relationship. And of course, that never happens. And if it's a parent, it's like, oh, maybe they are capable of changing because, you know, it's not true that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You know, I have clients who are like in their 60s and stuff, and they're just waking up to narcissistic abuse and they're doing their inner work, but they're not narcissists. So that's the thing. They're actually changing because they can self-reflect, but a covert narcissist is not going to self-reflect. They're going to play victim. They're going to say like the world is against them. And, you know, tiny little violin, woe is me. And it's not my fault that I behave that way. Or, you know, they're going to make excuses and they're still going to turn it onto you. But it's not as obvious that they are a narcissist because they do such a great job of like putting on this like good persona.
Yeah. So what do you do when they're making you seem crazy and everyone is on their side. And you're like, I'm just trying to get through this and not take this narcissistic abuse, but everyone's coming at you like you're crazy. You should have a relationship with them. There's no reason why you shouldn't have it. They're talking good about you. Like, how do you deal with that?
So first of all, understanding that anybody coming to you saying that after you've expressed that, like, you're being abused by this person, like, they're just, they're enablers. And that's just as toxic because they seem to be okay with abuse and they're not your people. Right. And like narcissists, they'll do smear campaigns. They will talk behind your back. They'll say horrible things about you and people will believe them. And whoever does believe them, they're not your people. Whoever is encouraging you to stay in an abusive situation for any reason, even if they're using your kids as an excuse on like why to stay, that's like the worst reason to stay, because then you're subjecting your children to like even more abuse and an unhealthy like dynamic between mother and father. And that's just not good. So what you do really is, you know, accept that that's their opinion and not listen, because you know deep down that you're being abused and this is unacceptable and you're worth way more than that. And you're able to take those steps to change your life because you know you have tried many times to make things work. Right. And any survivor of narcissistic abuse, you've exhausted all of your options to try and come to some sort of resolution with this person, and it's just not happening. And you're only going to continue wasting more time by listening to these people, by, you know, believing them that there is whatever reason that you need to stay together. There is no reason, you know? So you still stick to your guns and you still do what's right for you. And a lot of the times it's so hard to believe it because there's all this work and inner work that needs to be done. So having a support system, even if it's not people that you know, because obviously sometimes we don't have a support system of people we know because they either don't get it, they don't want to get it, or they're just as toxic themselves and it's just completely hopeless. So, you know, finding some sort of support system, whether it's like an online group or working with a coach or a mentor or like a therapist who's at least trauma informed and understands narcissistic abuse. Because if you work with one who isn't, that can be worse and make the whole situation way worse.
Right.
You have to be careful who you work with and make sure that they understand what narcissistic abuse entails and, you know, separating yourself from it in like the safest way possible and how to deal with like potential outbursts and potential like violent behavior and stuff like that, because you really never know sometimes.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've started realizing is you tell a therapist that you're dealing with a narcissist, they're like, well, I don't really know how to deal with that. So they like push you to somebody else. And it's like, I'm just trying to find somebody that can help me.
Exactly.
Now, these covert narcissists, when it comes to, I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I have written down here kids in a divorce that has one parent that is a divorce. They're really good at making the courts think that they're one way too.
Oh yeah.
And so this is something that I'm noticing a lot of men having trouble with is they have the courts thinking that they're this great mom, this great parent. They do everything for their kids, but in reality, their schoolwork's not getting done. You know, they're never home. But then they end up getting more time with the kids because the courts believe them.
Yep.
That just is more trauma to that person. How do they keep going? How do they find the will and want to just not want to give up on their kids at that point?
Right. So I'm actually a product of that. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. My mother actually alienated me against my father. And I found out when I was in like my mid to late 20s that he actually also apparently had custody of me and he did pay for child support after all. So, yeah,
wow.
I'm sure things are like a lot more, hopefully a little more transparent these days than they were back in the 80s in the court system. I don't really know. But, you know, it's unfortunate. And like my father didn't give up on me, but he could only try so much. And what I learned was that he actually, they had 50-50 custody, but I lived with my mother and he would try and come to the house or try to get me gifts and stuff like that. But I was just so brainwashed by my mother because it was only me and her. And she basically poisoned my mind and made me believe that he was this horrible monster. So I would refuse to see him. I was terrified of him. And so his next option would have been to come with police because legally he had the right to, but then he figured, you know what, like, I don't want to traumatize her anymore. She already thinks I'm a bad man. And so if I show up with police, right, what's my daughter going to think? It's going to be even worse. I think that's probably the worst case scenario that a father could go through. And right, I don't know how my father kept going, but luckily we did reconnect in 2014 when, you know, I just had this random urge to forgive him for supposedly abandoning me, which was the narrative that I learned. And then 2 years later in 2016, I actually found out the truth that he did not, in fact, abandon me. So that's like the worst, absolute worst case scenario. And it was traumatizing for myself because it was just like, what if it would have been too late? And then that's when I would have found out the truth. Right. So, right, you know, I mean, I hope that that doesn't happen to any of the men that might be listening to this, but you know, we all survived, I guess. It's unfortunate. It was a lot to heal from. And I'm sure my father's still doing some form of healing stuff around that as well, but he seems to be okay. And we have a great relationship now. We keep in touch. It's great. But there is that anger of like, you know, we were robbed of having a relationship for like almost like 2.5 decades, really. So, you know, I think any father who's dealing with something like that, you know, because mothers do get preferential treatment in the court system. I'm thinking that that's changing. I don't know. It's probably better these days than it was like 30 years ago. But again, I'm not currently going through any of that, so I wouldn't really know what to say. But, you know, just documenting as much as you can would be your best bet. So anything you can get in writing, like try to have as much communication via text as possible and then like have those screenshots. And if, you know, you'll have proof for the courts that like this person's unfit to be a mother. And, you know, if you're doing a custody thing and like the mom just doesn't even show up to pick up the kid at the designated time, like document that so that the court system's aware that she is not sticking to her end of the bargain and you have the proof and you have the documentation. The more that you can document, the better off you will be. Whether or not that's admissible in court is a completely different story, but the more you document, the more you know, the more that, you know, your attorney has this information, the more that like you're more likely to kind of win and be seen as the more favorable parent in front of the judge's eyes. And, you know, don't worry about like embarrassing her or whatever, because as long as you're being honest, she is the one who did that to herself. So, right, you know, but she might try to be a victim about it and say like, oh, well, how could you do this to me? Blah, blah, blah. And the important thing to understand is like, she is doing it to herself and right, you have the right to protect your children and they're more important. Imagine your child's feelings. So don't worry about how the narcissistic mother is feeling. Worry about your kids and just make your kids the main focus and just don't give up, right? Like you don't want to give up on them. And maybe at some point, like if it turns into a scenario like what my father had gone through, like maybe you have to kind of give up, but like don't lose hope altogether that like you're never going to have a relationship with that child. I mean, hopefully it never gets to that point, but you know, documentation will be your best bet.
Yes. Yeah. That's one thing I always tell people when they're going through divorce with kids is there's this app called Talking Parents, and it, all the messaging, the phone calls, the you can do journals, calendars, you can do child support payments all through it, and it's all supported by the court. Wow. So all of it's legalized. It's all recorded.
Amazing.
So that's one thing I always try telling people.
Yes.
It's just very difficult when the narcissistic parent is getting to the kids.
Yes.
And making them think a certain way.
Exactly.
I don't know how to manage, maybe you do, on how, when they go to, so me and my ex have 50-50. Mm-hmm. When they go to the one parent's house that's a narcissist and go to, say, my house, for an example, mm-hmm, they're bouncing back between a narcissistic house and a non-narcissistic house.
Right.
How do you get the kids to understand what's not okay and what is okay when one parent's making them feel a certain way?
Right. So yeah, that's a great question. And I have a lot of clients who actually are going through very similar scenarios. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, the last thing you want to do is talk badly about the other parent because you have to sort of lead by example as a parent. And I mean, you know, take my advice with a grain of salt as somebody who's not a parent, but you know, this is what has worked for my clients. Yeah.
Okay.
So definitely just, you know, understanding first and foremost that at least you have that 50-50 in place And at least the child has access to the stable parent, right? So like that first and foremost is a really big deal, because if they had absolutely no access to you, then that's going to be a lot worse, because then they're more susceptible to that brainwashing and, you know, basically what happened in my scenario. So first and foremost, you know, there is probably going to be some trauma that they'll probably have to heal from, but it will not be to the extent of how bad it would be if it was only that parent influencing them up until, you know, their 20s and 30s even, you know?
Yeah.
So first and foremost, that. And secondly, like when you do have the child, you know, just explaining to them, like, you know, sometimes mommy just says stuff that is wrong and doesn't make any sense. And, you know, sometimes she says things that might hurt you, but I just want you to understand that you, it's not true. And, you know, however you feel about it is valid. Because what I learned from doing my own inner work is that children just need to have that understanding that it's okay to feel their emotions. And a narcissistic parent won't let them have that. And they're going to make the kid responsible for their emotions, right? So, you know, if your kid is coming home with like these stories of like, oh, like, do you actually love me? Because mom said that you don't, you know, document that too, right? Because that's evidence of like brainwashing and like that she's talking badly behind your back. And there's obviously no proof out there that you are unfit to be a father. So, you know, it doesn't hold any weight, but the kid's obviously going to be affected. So just letting your kid have their emotions, letting them feel however they feel, and just, you know, not talking badly, because you don't want to set that example, right? And they're already getting that example from the toxic parent, which is not great, but at least you'll be able to teach them that, like, this is not how you solve issues. This isn't how you behave. And, you know, mom just, she's unwell, and this is just something that she needs to work on, or whatever way you phrase things to kids to make it palatable for them to understand.
Depending on their age.
Exactly. Whatever those parenting people say, how to communicate that stuff.
Awesome. Now, do you have a book that you would recommend to anybody?
I have a whole,
I like to ask everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have one particular book. I mean, the main books that I recommend are just about the mind body connection, because those will teach you how to process those emotions, because it's definitely going to affect you physically. So anything by Dr. John Sarno, you know, there's a lot of different books about like for specific different things, like for narcissistic parents. Off the top of my head, it's just not coming to me, but I can send you like a link of recommended books on my Amazon list. And yeah, there's a whole bunch, but you know, the more you can educate yourself about it, the better. And that's going to help you understand, like, whatever you can do to educate yourself about how a narcissist's mind works, that's going to help you take it a lot less personally, even though it is obviously personal because it's happening to you. And, you know, applying that to your life and just having that understanding is great.
Something that I want to just ask you real quick is, how is the mind body connected? Like, when you're mentally dealing with something, how are you physically? I'm trying to figure that out. Like, how do I connect those two?
For sure.
To where I'm feeling the pain in my back or my legs, or you know, I'm feeling it in my body. Is it just because your body's so tense from all the stress, or?
Yeah. So I'll tell you a bit about the mind body connection, because that will make all of this make sense. So basically, what the mind-body connection is just, it's, they call it the theory, but it's like a fact that the mind and the body are the same thing. The mind is a reflection of the body. The body is a reflection of the mind. So if you are in physical pain, it is your brain giving you these pain signals so that you're focused on your body and you're not focused on your emotions, because it really just stems from childhood trauma. Yeah. And we don't think of emotional abuse as childhood trauma, because when you think trauma, you think like a kid who grew up in a war zone, or, you know, witnessed extreme violence, sexual abuse, extreme neglect, extreme poverty, famine, stuff like that. That's what we tend to think of collectively as trauma. But trauma is also like the invalidation of emotions. So it's not necessarily that capital T trauma, but it is still a form of trauma, and the body still goes into fight or flight. So when you're a kid and let's say you're experiencing a very big emotion like sadness, and it's just a huge inconvenience to your narcissistic parent, the kid brain internalizes that as, okay, so it's upsetting my mother that I am sad. So I need to stop being sad, because if I continue being sad, that's going to piss my mom off even more. And if that happens, she's not going to love me anymore. And if that happens, I'm going to die. That's literally how the brain interprets emotions as a kid. Wow. Yeah. So that's why kids just need to know it's okay to have their emotions, because then they're not going to repress them. But, you know, when a kid does not know that, and you could even have well-meaning parents, you know, and it could have been a teacher that made you think that you will die from having these emotions, right? It just, if it keeps happening over and over, and it can be done in very subtle ways and in very well-meaning ways, and society reinforces it with big girls don't cry, big boys don't cry, and all that. So, you know, it's no wonder that so many people have chronic pain, right? And
Wow, that's
exactly. Yeah. So then you go through life, and that belief that you're going to die from feeling your emotions, it doesn't just go away because you turn 18 and your brain is like, okay, let's start interpreting emotions like adults now. That's not how it works. So you continue that cycle of repression over and over and over. And, you know, a lot of the times, you know, you get emotional or you get triggered, and the instinct is to run from that, because it's dangerous to your nervous system. And doing the inner work is all about training your nervous system to understand that your emotions are safe. It's okay to have your emotions. It's okay to cry. It's okay to feel. And understanding that emotions are a physical process. So, you know, when you hear really horrible news, you get like sick to your stomach, right? That is proof right there that emotions are physical. So imagine you've been repressing that for decades. Where do those emotions go? Nowhere. They stay stuck in your body. Right. And it can manifest in different ways. So for a lot of people, it manifests as chronic pain, anxiety, depression, stuff like that. Even like IBS, eating disorders, eczema, skin issues, stuff like that, or just weird symptoms. Yep. Even just weird symptoms.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's mind blowing.
That is mind blowing.
It's crazy. Yeah. And even just mystery symptoms too, they can manifest as the mind-body connection. But as long as you've been to your doctor and your doctor did the tests and determined you're not dying and it's not like a horrible disease, you can probably rest assured that it is your repressed emotions.
Wow. So some people could turn to even anger.
Yeah.
So when something triggers them, they blow up and get angry.
Right. And that's the thing. So the thing is with anger, and I'm so glad you brought that up, we tend to think of anger as just like this blow up, right? And, you know, you tend to think of like a man who is an alcoholic and, you know, just loses their shit in public. And that's not what anger is, right? That's repressed anger manifesting explosively. And that's a big problem, of course. And we tend to be terrified of anger because like, that's kind of how we think about it. And you hear like anger management and all that kind of stuff. And the thing is that anger is just a human emotion. So, you know, there is a lot of repressed rage there when you have been repressing those emotions, because you've been through a bunch of injustices, especially dealing with a narcissist. So and narcissists do things that piss people off, but then you're not allowed to be angry about it because, you know, you have to keep walking on eggshells.
Yep.
So you repress that and it stays buried deep down and it has nowhere to go. So that anger can manifest physically. So as long as you're okay with understanding that it's normal to be angry, and anger is just a human emotion that all humans experience, and it's just another emotion to process, right? Like, you can do that inner work, feel the anger, and just notice where it is in your body, right? Because acting on your anger versus feeling your anger are two completely different things. So if your solution to like that trigger, right, when that anger just gets triggered in you, you get that knee-jerk reaction, if your first thing is to just lash out, then you're repressing your anger because you're acting on it because you don't want to feel it. Yeah, exactly. So the trick, right, and sometimes if you get triggered, maybe you're face to face with the narcissist and you can't just process that right away, because that's the last thing you want to do is process an emotion in front of a narcissist, because they're just going to have a field day feeding off of that. You can totally give yourself a little pep talk and say like, okay, some anger is coming up right now. I'm just going to try and keep my cool because I have to gray rock because I'm right in front of this person, but I'm going to process this later. I'm going to journal it out, scream into a pillow, whatever I need to do. And that's how you start to release that anger. And when you sit with the feeling, it's going to manifest physically. So that knee-jerk reaction, you're going to feel that in your body. And your body is going to think that that's a threat because your nervous system's activated because you're instantly going into fight or flight.
To be completely transparent, that's something that I've had to work on. It went from me blowing up, and I think just dealing with narcissists in my life a couple of them, and growing up with one, I have a lot of suppressed feelings, okay. and it was where I was blowing up in anger or punching mm-hmm. walls or things like that. But doing a lot of work, I started getting into where I just shut down. Mm-hmm. I just push people away. Mm-hmm. And now I'm starting to learn. I just need to process it, get it out of my system, and then move on.
Exactly.
Like, you can't change these people.
Exactly.
You can't change what they're doing.
Exactly.
They're going to always do that.
Yep. And that's maddening. So, that is anger inducing in itself. And it's okay to be angry right. about that.
Yeah. Especially when you can't get them out of your life and have to deal with it. That's one thing that I've always had to struggle with is, why did I do this to myself?
Right.
And I was blaming myself for putting myself in this situation mm-hmm. when in reality, they're the ones causing me the pain.
Exactly.
So just to be completely transparent on that, but that's mind blowing that, you know, this is mind body connection.
Yes.
I didn't think of like skin diseases or anything like that could be related. Mm-hmm.
Totally. That's again, amazing. As long as, you know, your doctor cleared that you're not dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. It's wild.
Well, thank you for coming on today. Where could people find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Let's Get Your Shift Together, shift with an F, all one word. And they can also find me on my website, letsgetyourshifttogether.com.
And no snowflakes over there, right?
Apparently we're getting snow this week. So yeah.
No snowflakes, no soft people on your Instagram.
I totally thought you were making a Canada joke.
Well, that too.
Yeah. No snowflakes on my Instagram page, that's for sure. And, you know, it's...
Your story's cracked me up.
Thank you. I'm so glad. You have to see the humor in it, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your knowledge and everything with the audience.
Awesome. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. I will catch you guys next week.